Welcome. We are back at the Festival of Organization Design 2024. And with us today is Jardina from Rosetta Agile. So welcome, Jardina.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
And we have Amy. And I'm Damien. I'm really excited for this talk. The word that got me excited is soulful. But before we get to soulful, tell us a little bit about yourself. Let's hear what brought you here, Jardina.
Oh, let's see. What brought me here? I do a lot of work with agile transformations, and I found that community didn't know a whole lot about org design. So I literally Googled org design and found this group 5 or 6 years ago. And it's such a wonderful group, and I learned a ton about, I'm still learning a ton about org design, but the more I got involved, the more I got involved.
I'm intrigued. One thing I've found with all of the conversations we're having is that people don't know org design is a thing as a title, but you knew that the agile community wasn't familiar with it. But what were you seeing? What were you witnessing that you're like, I know there's a concept that should exist.
Yeah.
And you managed to find it, but what would that look like?
In the agile community, there's always been a lot of talk about creating cross-functional teams. So getting people out of being functional and into being more cross-functional. And that's lovely, but you can't just go do that. There's other implications and repercussions of that that the agile community just didn't know. Every time I would ask, they would just all say Spotify. And I'm like, okay, there's got to be more to this than you can't just walk into a giant organization of hundreds of thousands of people, say Spotify, and then poof, it's done. How do you actually get from here to Spotify or whatever? But in the agile community would just say, like, who cares? You don't have to change the org chart, just move people around. But that's not really how I found it to work in real life.
What do you see the overlap between organization design and agile organizations?
I think it's the underpinnings. When I think about organizational design, if you don't have that design in place, I think of it like you're driving a car with the alignment that's off. You have to keep overcorrecting.
Yeah.
So if you have a good underpinning, it holds you so that you can move forward.
And all of the pieces get worn down much faster than they should be.
That's exactly right. And then you might get a flat tire, or you might have to be towed because you were not really driving on a stable car.
Let's rewind right into the early days. What brought you to your career where you are today?
Oh, we're backing up my origin story. I studied computer science and math.
Okay.
And I started
snap.
Yeah.
Oh, me too. So did you?
Yes.
Oh, excellent. So I started my career as a programmer. I was even going to be an actuary, but I decided to be a programmer. Yeah. And I did. I ran a software company for a long time, 12 years. And I just kept feeling like the problems were not in the code. I got into a lot of the software development methods early, like pre-agile. And then I got into agile. And I was like, okay, this is way better than what we were doing. You know, I was really flummoxed by, you know, your college, we call it college, university, with all these smart people in computer science. And then you go into the workplace and the IT department is the dregs of society. And they can get nothing done, nothing delivered, everything's broken. And I'm like, how did this happen with a whole lot of smart people aggregated to fail every day? And so that was the problem I wanted to solve, is why is software so bad? It's better now. It was so bad. So I was just way more interested in how we develop software than developing the software. And then I just went from there to like, how do we organize all departments? Because it's really fascinating.
Do you think that software departments and engineers, it's the same things that tick in a software organization to other organizations? Or do you think there's some sort of uniqueness to software development?
Oh, there's uniqueness. Sure. And there's also the historical evolution of software. It's different. The communication part is the same. Like bad communication, bad collaboration, that's common across. And then, of course, the soulfulness piece.
Like, which is a word you don't often hear with software.
Well, that's because a lot of times the life is sucked out of a software department. But when you bring soul into it, you can have some really lively products.
What does that mean to you to bring soul into a software team?
Software team or any team, right?
Yeah.
When I talk about soul, I did intentionally choose this word. I think the easy way to describe what soulfulness is to think about what it isn't. So what is it like to be in a soul-crushing environment? And everyone's had an experience, or most people have had an experience of being in a soul-crushing environment. So what is it in IT? I worked with an IT department once where I tried to do some collaborative. We tried to do agile, right? There's a lot of human interaction in agile. Some of the programmers were like, wait a minute. This is like manual communication. And I said, what does that mean? I don't know, manual communication. And he said, you want us to talk to each other? And I was like, yeah, I do. A lot of times we think we can automate and transact the heck out of it and not have to have human interaction.
Yeah. And that's really where the value often lies.
Right? Well, yeah. The thing is, we can architect a process as best as we can and try and have no gaps, no cracks, no gaps, no overlaps.
Exactly.
Right? Yep. But you can't, because there's always a crack, a gap, and an overlap. And we accommodate for those by having human interaction. Yep. That's the safety net. So you take that away, you have no safety net.
I'd love to hear more about your soulful concept. And then we can dig more into how you ended up there. Tell us about it.
I'll cut to the chase for a second. I end up in all places because I see a gap. And I'm like, wow, this is so missing. And it's affecting the business outcome. So that's how I end up anywhere I end up. But how I see soulfulness is I look at the things that are crushing people's souls and the impact on the business. So I talked in my session about there's three conditions for soul in an organization: dignity, creativity, and human connection. And without those things, Dan Pink can talk all he wants about autonomy, mastery, and purpose. And those things are a higher level. You sort of have to evolve to that, like the Maslow hierarchy. But if we don't have dignity, we're not getting purpose. Often I see organizations designed in a way that robs people of their dignity. We have people hustle for their dignity, for their self-worth as a reward system. And that's soul crushing.
Yeah. We sometimes think of it as your personal energy. What are the things at work that give you energy and make you excited and want to be there? And you can finish the day full of excitement in life. Mm-hmm. And what are the vampires that suck away your energy? And even just spending an hour on that piece of work feels like it's a whole day. It drains so much from you.
Yeah, exactly. And it doesn't mean that we have to be woo and have people just do whatever they want. I joke about, like, it doesn't mean we have to burn incense, although you can. But what it means is that the basic human needs are met. So the creativity piece, you can get energy. When we are in a creative state, we build energy versus being in the transactional state, which sucks energy.
So imagine I'm a leader. I don't know a whole lot about org design, but I'm there day to day looking after things at the office. And I think my team's going okay. There's a bit of problems here and there, but on the whole, we seem to be going okay. What are the things that you think I should be looking into? And what are the steps that I should be taking to see, is my organization soulful? And what can I do to investigate and diagnose that?
There are some capabilities as a leader. Leaders are responsible for creating conditions for soulfulness, which I just described. Not so much directing work, but making sure that we have the conditions in place for work to get done. So that's the shift I talk to leaders a lot about, is stop focusing on the work and the status, but more about the conditions, like what's blocking people, what's frustrating people, and removing those obstacles. I think a leader's job is to create and open up new possibilities. And so if we're not doing that as a leader and we're focused more downward on the work, it's a bit soul crushing. So that's a leader's job. But then I always say, be all the soulful you want, but don't forget that we're running a business. So you're still creating direction.
Yeah. What are the warning signs I should be looking for to indicate that things might not be going in the right direction?
So this is about listening to your team, because the team is the one that will be giving you that information. So self-awareness is always that first step. If you're not self-aware or you can't see how you're showing up and you're stuck in, like a lot of folks, all of us are stuck in ego, then it's hard to see what's going on. So opening up that self-awareness, you can even ask for feedback or just attuning yourself to pay attention to how the energy shifts when you walk into the room. That is that first step. So one of the things I talk about is being aware of how you're, or whether or not you're polluting. So when a leader walks in and pollutes the air because of their ego or whatever it is, their agenda, that can lead to the soul-crushing piece.
Yeah. I think of that, and I think of a leader walking into the room and everyone sort of shies away. That's somewhere I just don't want to work. And I imagine many people would feel a similar way.
When I think about leaders, though, and even coaching leaders or working with leaders, it's about uncovering their soulful leadership.
Yeah.
Because everyone has a soul.
Yeah. Right?
So a lot of times when a leader walks in and makes everyone tense, it's because they have armor.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They've got baggage. They've had world experience. Their soul has been crushed and they're passing it on. So it's about unpacking and unpeeling some of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's think of it from the other point of view. What should I be looking for in an organization that's thriving? If I'm a leader and I walk into the room, how do I know that things are on the right track for me? Also for all of us.
How do you know that they're on the right track when you walk into a room?
Yeah.
Well, people are open and sharing. That's the biggest key.
Yeah. With each other, do you mean, or with you?
Well, perfect question. With each other. a lot of times I'll go into a team, and when I observe a leadership team working and it's hub and spoke to the leader, that tells me that that's not soulful. They're impressing and trying to pander to the leader. The other thing is that they're not sharing obstacles. Or I say, what's slowing you down? Because if you say obstacle, everyone gets nervous and they won't share anything. But it's like, what's slowing you down? And if everyone says, everything's fine, we have it under control, nothing's under control like that. But so they're not really open to sharing. There's some fear maybe in the organization.
Yeah. No, that's really good.
I'd love to know more about your own journey again and how you got to coming together with this framework. Are there any stories that you experienced yourself that made you sit down and ask these questions?
Listen, it was all the times that my soul was crushed and it felt crappy. And then when I observe other people's souls being crushed and I see that it affects the business, it affects the business results. And then I was also not a very self-aware leader. So I told a story in the session I'll share with you. I was the leader who walked into not just a meeting, but into the joke was that when you hear the elevator ding and the click, click, click of the high heels on the marble, like turn down the music and act serious because Jardine is here. And that's not great because I'm affecting their productivity. And it's because I want to be taken seriously and I want to make sure that we're getting stuff done. They were getting stuff done with the music on. I didn't happen to like music, but that's my ego polluting the entire office.
As a leader, your influence is more than you might expect sometimes. It's just the fact that you have that title
can
cause a reaction,
yeah,
positive or negative.
I had another one where I went on vacation and I asked the team, like, hey, work on this while I'm gone. They were peers. Work on this when I'm gone and then we can finish it up when I get back. I got back from vacation, they hadn't done a thing. And I asked why, peers, of course. I asked why and they said, well, we know you're going to change it all, so we didn't bother.
Oh, ouch.
Right? Yeah. That's, again, my ego and my desire to be a know-it-all affecting the productivity of everybody else and the soulfulness.
What I'm still hearing, though, is that you did create a space that you were able to hear that feedback. So I think that's still amazing. You were hearing that feedback. It obviously didn't feel good at the time.
So the magical antidote for all soul-crushing things is curiosity. And I'm a curious person. So even if it hurts my feelings, I'm still curious. But I think that's what leaders really need to lean into, is getting curious.
Yeah. And maybe you don't have all the answers, but the answers are there. So you should go out and look for them. Yeah,
absolutely. And ask the question.
Yeah, I love that. Getting the right mindset.
One question I do love to ask our guests is, if we could sit here and the three of us together, we can click our fingers and it gives a skill to every leader on this earth. Is it curiosity? Or is it something else?
It's curiosity. It is being open and being curious. Listening is part of that, but that goes hand in hand with curiosity. And of course, self-awareness is the key. But to get to self-awareness, like that core skill, that capability is curiosity.
And if someone here, someone listening is like, I would love to be more curious, can you give them examples of what that might look like?
Yeah, so funny. I've said curiosity for so many years. And my best friend actually just very recently asked me, like, what do you mean by that? Because she said, I'm curious about, like, what kind of flower is this? But that's not the kind of curiosity I mean. And I didn't realize there was a distinction. But this is in high stakes. So in high stakes, when you feel your emotions elevating, being curious in that state, why is my emotion elevating? Why is this bothering me? What's happening here when I feel like things are getting tense? That's the curiosity that you have to lean into. Not just like, I'm curious about what kind of flower this is, which is also wonderful.
It's interesting the way you talk about bringing about change in an organization, is that the leader should be curious externally, but also should be questioning themselves, and that their influence is major on the organization around them.
One of the things I say a lot is great leaders are not driven by emotion, but informed by it. Your emotion is data. So it's not ignore it, which we've taught people for many years, like ignore it, suppress your emotions. You don't have to suppress it. You just have to be informed by it instead of having it run your life. And then I would say, like, about the external curiosity too, we've all worked with people that are difficult or resistors or the unpopped kernels, as we've talked about. That's another place to get really curious. Why are you so difficult, if you don't ask it that way? But like, what's what's behind this? They care. They have a concern.
Yeah.
You should hear it instead of just trying to shut it down.
Yeah. I can't remember exactly the words that you said, but it's interesting that many people, when they think about org design, they think of the org as something external to them that they're modeling and figuring out how it works. And sometimes you almost forget that you're a part of that as well, that you're part of that network of interactions and emotions and people and experiences. And it's very hard often to reflect on yourself and see yourself as part of that organization that's being designed.
Yeah, you're in the system. To that point, we've talked a lot about the development part as a leader, as a participant, as a team. But then with org design, how do we actually design a soulful organization? We can talk about being curious and all those things, but how do we build that? How do we operationalize that into the DNA? And that is where I think the magic really is. Building policy, governance, structure that helps support, like that CAR alignment, a soulful organization.
What are the things that people should do to be developing a soulful organization?
So again, I'm going to flip it on you.
Yep.
Looking at how some of the processes and policies may be soul crushing and unraveling some of that and getting back to the original purpose of those. So I have a three-step process. What's making it soul crushing is the first step. What was the original soulful purpose of it that maybe got lost? And then what would it take to bring soul back into that process? So I think of like budget planning, performance management, like these are soul crushing processes. They don't have to be. So how can we tweak that? And how can we build in some soulfulness into the policy, into the role description?
Is it as simple as I walk up to Mary and say, Mary, is this work soul crushing for you? And why? Is it that simple? Or is there something deeper that we should be thinking of?
It could be that simple. I love that question. You don't even have to say, I tell people like, hey, use bridging language, because you might not want to walk up to someone and say that and they might be a little surprised. Is there friction? Is it frustrating? Where do you feel like if we remove the friction, it would be more fulfilling? Like, we can ask questions like that. But it's not even just an individual, right? Sometimes it's across multiple handoffs. I think of prioritization. Being able to do focused work is so soul filling, whereas when you can't focus, it's soul crushing. So do we have systems? Is our governance policy, how does it manage capacity? That would be soulful, to be building better capacity management into your governance process, which nobody does.
Yeah. Well, Jolene, I love what we've talked about today. One of the things that really drives me is we know that people find so much meaning in the work that they do, and living in a soul-crushing way just can kind of really destroy someone emotionally. So connecting people to purpose is really such an important thing to do.
Such a great framework. I think everybody resonates with that concept, especially in the workplace.
Yeah. So thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us, not only at the podcast, but also at the Festival of Org Design. And we hope to speak to you again soon.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much.
And if anyone does want to follow up on things they've heard today, what's the best place to find out more?
Yeah. Connect with me on LinkedIn. I have some websites, rosettaagile.com, jardinalondon.com. I do have a book. I didn't mention that. Cultivating Transformations, available at all fine booksellers.
Amazing.
Yes. And I have tons of blogs and articles that you will find on my website.
Cool. So it sounds like anyone who wants to move beyond demos, walk up to a person at work and ask, is this soul crushing? They have a book they can dig into for some more specifics.
So much resources. I have tons of resources out there. So yes, go check them out.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.